AT&T is ready for its day in court. Bloomberg has learned AT&T is preparing to take on the U.S. Justice Department if that agency sues to block its purchase of Time Warner. And what's interesting about this story is I hadn't realized that AT&T's merger agreement with Time Warner specifies something about how just how far it'll go to make sure this deal gets done.
What we're hearing from sources is that you know, there may be some asset sales, some divestitures, like Time Warner CNN or potentially DirecTV, which AT&T owns, as a way to maybe make the Justice Department okay with this deal going through.
A trove of leaked documents from an offshore law firm is casting a spotlight on some of the world's wealthiest people. Meanwhile, Britain's Guardian says millions of pounds from the Queen's private estate has been invested in a Cayman Islands fund as part of an offshore portfolio that's never previously been disclosed. Though Reuters hasn't been able to independently confirm the findings, which are said to be just a small part of a long list of revelations.
And this term retail apocalypse has been thrown around, but if you really look at what's coming over the next 5 to 7 years, there's an explosion of debt coming due, high yield debt, so that's debt that's riskier, that's with retailers that are somewhat struggling already, at a time when overall high yield debt is exploding as well. So what's likely to happen, and again, credit markets are likely to tighten, so you're going to have all this debt coming due for all these struggling retailers exactly when it's going to be harder to refinance.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's November 9th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Nice broadcast for you lined up today. Later in the program, Ipsos North America is out with a new quarterly research piece for consumers. It's called WTF, or What the Future? And we will talk with one of the senior editors there a little bit later on about that coming up. And shortly, it's our Thought Leader Thursday. Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. We're going to be talking about some banking news and regulations, the tax plan, all of that good stuff. But first, on the WGN Chicago market desk this morning, the Associated Bank market desk, Asian shares are mixed as Japan stocks benchmarks failed to sustain a strong rally. Investors monitoring Donald Trump's visit to Beijing may have had something to do with that. Japan's Nikkei surged as much as 2% early going in the market day. But right now, the market Nikkei is off about a quarter, down 45 points. The Hang Seng is up almost three quarters at 228 points, and the Shanghai is up just a third. In Europe this morning, markets are generally lower, with the FTSE off just a fraction. The DAX and the CAC are lower by a fraction as well. Here in the United States, futures are pointing toward opening losses when the opening bell rings later this morning. On Wall Street, Dow futures off 27 points. NASDAQ futures are off about 12, and S&P futures are off about 5. Crude oil is at $56.92 a barrel, which is up almost 11 cents. Watching a couple of stories for you this morning. One of them involves the tax bill. Top administration officials have met privately with Republican lawmakers as Senate GOP tax writers put finishing touches on their bill, cutting levies on people and corporations and help reshaping the federal tax code. Republican Senator David Perdue of Georgia says the measure would fully eliminate the deduction people can take for state and local property, income, and sales taxes. The House version would retain the deduction only for property taxes and cut that at $10,000. That drew opposition from GOP lawmakers from states with local taxes that are high, including New Jersey, California, New York, Illinois. Perdue says the Senate plan would compress the current 7 personal income tax brackets down to 4. On Tuesday, two Republicans had said the bill would retain the 7 brackets, but cautioned that changes were possible. All of this means that the working on this tax bill is complicated, and you have to wonder if they're going to meet their deadline of Thanksgiving to get this thing passed. Wisconsin's Economic Development Board has approved the key provisions of a contract implementing that massive incentive package to bring Foxconn technology to the southeastern portion of the state. Governor Walker signed a bill in September that provides nearly $3 billion in cash to Foxconn if it invests $10 billion in a new flat-screen factory in Mount Pleasant that could employ up to 13,000 people. Mount Pleasant in Racine County, Wisconsin. It's Thought Leader Thursday, and Rod Murray is here from Associated Bank. Rod is a group SVP for commercial banking and head of the leveraged finance group there at Associated. Rod, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Nice to see you. A lot has happened since the last time you were here, so I'm dying to get into all of it.
All right, let's get into it.
The first, Jerome Powell, nominated to be the new Federal Reserve Chair. What do you know about Mr. Powell, and how might he change the scenery?
So what we know about Mr. Powell is that we don't know what his strict monetary policy is going to be, but we know that he's been described as everything from dovish to a centrist or being neutral. One thing that I think is interesting about Mr. Powell is that he will be the first, would be the first in that chair in the last 40-plus years that doesn't have an economics degree or background. So that might bring a slightly different spin to what he brings to the table.
Is that something we should be concerned about, or will he have enough other voices and people, colleagues in the Fed that will help him with that?
Well, there's two schools of thought on that. There are some who have come out and said it can be a concern because how will he act if there's an economic downturn? But there are others who say he'll take a more pragmatic approach and more of a looking at the rules, regulations, not loosening everything, but taking a more of a pragmatic approach to how he approaches the monetary policy.
Kind of strange, too, that this is one of the first times in recent history that the president hasn't renominated a Federal Reserve chair. That's happened in other presidencies. Do you think that's just because this was an Obama appointee, or is that too political?
I don't think it's just because of that. It is the first time for a while, and I'm sure you've read everything that I did, that President Trump had a very good meeting with Janet Yellen, and it kind of put her back into the forefront to potentially carry that chair on. But the speculation is that it's more about policy and regulation or deregulation that probably moved him off that.
Yeah. He's also, I don't know how to describe the next part of this, but in terms of regulation, banking regulation, he seems to be on a different side of this than the president, President Trump. We've heard him comment in the past about how we should stay vigilant and be prepared to respond to changes in the markets, evolving risks. That sounds like somebody who wants the current regulations, at least some of them, still in place to remain in place.
Yes. There certainly is going to be some kind of a middle ground, and it's probably going to be closer to on the conservative side of things than on the looser. I came across something that I read that, if you just give me 1 second, that really I think hits home to what you're saying. It talks about capital liquidity, and it ends with his comment. This is Powell's comment that, but in the longer term, stronger prudential requirements for large banking firms will produce more sustainable credit availability and economic growth. And, you know, if you're nitpicking words out there, I think the word large is very interesting there. You know, so does that mean that there is some open ground for the smaller banks or for the regional banks?
And that would be something that obviously you and your colleagues at Associated Bank are interested in, because it seems like there's a trend that the smaller mid-sized banks should not be regulated the same as the large banks.
Correct. And you're right. That gets right down our alley for a bank like Associated. And his other comments that I've read him say are there are a lot of costs with regulations, and he gets that. But he also is quick to say it provides a prudent backstop for liquidity and capital if there is ever a downturn.
Dovish, you described him as dovish. He's been described as dovish to centrist. Dovish means that he wouldn't really want more rate increases, and they're a growing chorus of people who say we need more of those.
Right. They're always going after that inflation rate or the GDP rate of the 2x. You know, it's already baked in certainly into the markets. There's going to be another rate increase in December. I think everybody is unanimously saying that will happen. And then the Fed goes out to say they believe, I think, 3 more for next year. Now, you know, if you talk to our capital markets folks, you know, they're saying more likely 2. But what happens? How does it control? What's that economic indicator number? How close does it reach to 2? And will he control it, you know, with interest rates or not?
Yeah, to harken people back to the beginning of this year, the Fed said it was going to raise rates 5x. I think, wasn't it 4 or 5 times?
How things change.
Yeah, right. Let's talk a little bit about some new numbers in the Chicago market on banking. Deposits are what, going up or going down?
Deposits have gone down, and I should say that the increase has not been what it has been historically. Mm-hmm. So they did go up, but by all of 1% if you look at their year-end numbers of June 30th.
Why is that?
So there's a couple of different theories on it. There's the population loss that Chicago has had. Certainly, the economic growth in Chicago, while it's there, is not hand in hand with some of the coasts per se. So it's hard to explain. And you know, you look at that 1% number that I just said versus New York has during that same time is at a 10% deposit growth, and LA 6.5%. I kind of come back to probably a little bit of loss of population, and then you also have more and more people looking for yield. So they're not going to maybe put their money in the banks as much, and maybe Chicago is just that type of a city that looking for more yield and alternative investments.
Yeah, so they would, instead of putting money in a savings account or something like that, they'd move it into the stock market perhaps?
Yep, stock market, real estate, you know, anything.
How is this figured out? I mean, are there certain banks that are monitored and that the data comes from those banks to get these numbers?
Yes. I mean, everybody reports up their deposit growth. It's the one thing that from a balance sheet's perspective, you can look at a year over year basis and it gets reported. So it's not every bank has seen just 1%, right? There's winners and losers in that category. And depending on what tact you take, you know, we're going to probably talk a little bit more about this, but what tact you take from a retail standpoint, from a technology standpoint, you know, and how you approach the market's going to drive whether you're a winner or a loser on the deposit side of things.
I was going to ask if this means people are putting more money in their mattresses and shoeboxes or...
Well, I don't think the mattresses in the shoeboxes as much, but right. You know there are online capabilities now that wouldn't necessarily be a Chicago bank either. So you know that could mean Chicago money is going into deposits, but not necessarily into a Chicago-based bank.
The competition here is fierce, isn't it, among banks?
It's absolutely fierce, and there's always that balancing game of. How do you spend money on the retail side of things for brick and mortar versus your technology spend to garner those deposits? Because that's really what fuels everything. Let's go back to our old, the holiday movie of It's a Wonderful Life, right? It's the deposits are what fuels the lending side of things and all the investments the bank can make.
How do how does a bank like Associated look at these numbers and change or not the marketing strategy to get more people into the door?
Sure. So it's a constant balancing act on what I just said there, the tech side and the retail side. We're not unlike a lot of banks that has probably shrunk its retail footprint on the traditional brick and mortar because when's the last time any of us have been into a bank to transact? That being said, you have to still have some brand marketing. People want to know you're there in order to be comfortable and confident to put their money in there. And the flip side is you take that money that you may save on the branch side and making more efficient operations, smaller operations, important technology. That's where all the money's going because we're trying to drive and keep up with the technology side for mobile application, mobile online banking, mobile account opening, and that's where tomorrow or today, I should say, is going.
The stats again, the Chicago metropolitan area advanced 1% in total deposits compared to New York at 10%, Los Angeles at 6.5%. This geographic part of this is interesting, though. I mean, is it something that researchers want to delve into a little bit more, or is it just something that'll pass?
I think that it will. They'll delve into it a little bit more, but they will never have a hard fact, and they'll speculate just about probably the population loss for Chicago that's moved out.
Well, and dovetailing nice on this conversation is if you want an empty bank branch in Chicago, the property is certainly there, the real estate. What's going on with the number of, and I think we've had this conversation in the past, we've touched on it, with all of the empty bank branches around?
So it follows, the banking side follows the same as the normal retail channels, that people just don't go shop anymore, as much as the big boxes. They also aren't going into the bank branches. So, given what we just said about technology, so yeah, it's down 8% in the past decade, and there's a lot of real estate folks who speculate that will decrease by 20% here in Chicago of the number of branches over the next decade. So it's more cost. It's a big cost to have a branch, and there's value there. There certainly is value there, but to have a gigantic branch that is going to not be as efficient as a smaller branch or as an online technology platform just isn't where they're going to pour their money into.
I think I saw some stats that showed the Chicago area saw a 11% drop in branches, physical branches, between 2010 and 2016. Is there for the banks that own these branches, this property, is there an opportunity to turn these properties into something else that would benefit the bank?
There is, but what is happening usually on the banking side of things is if the bank owned the branch, then they're just probably going to sell it frankly, to move it off their balance sheet. But if a bank, you know, has a, it's really just a land lease, you know, they're going to have to sublet it out, and it's becoming a lot of different things. You know, we see it all over the place when you drive by. Think you can just tell by looking. Oh, that used to be a branch. That used to be a bank. That used to be a branch.
Yeah, more and more of the branches I seem to be going into, at least the ones where I go and do my business, there are no humans inside of them. Maybe one human,
right?
And it's all automated stuff,
right? Automated. Network automated branches really is what it is called, and then to your point, maybe one person in there or a couple, and so the shift has been, instead of having, you know, 7-8 people or more occupying a branch, is you have a universal banker that can handle your teller transaction, your open your account, take your mortgage loan, you know, and handle anything else that your banking needs.
And is that what the market wants? Is that what most customers want? I know sometimes it's a little it's a pain sometimes when you want to actually find a human to talk to, you have to drive to another branch. What is the market driving in this area?
Well, I think that the market still just wants good customer service. Yeah. So that's going to, you know, and if you have that, whether you have one people or seven people, if ultimately you fulfill their need, they're going to be happy. So I think that the market is driving that while they might have to drive a little bit to go see somebody else, it's so rare, Steve, these days that people are seeking out a bank I have to do my mortgage here, I have to do my deposit bank here. It's just not happening as often. So yeah. The market does drive it.
So what you're telling me is I need to learn how to use my app a little bit better than my little smartphone, right? And the computer. And then sort of I want to close by talking about, you know, the banking industry has changed so much, it seems, since the Great Recession, since 2008. I mean, that was just 10 years ago. And it seems like it's a completely different landscape.
It is. It's amazing to think that it was just 10 years ago. And the landscape now is, to your point, 2007 through 2009 changed everything. And your investment banks and even your regular large banks and on down to the regionals, you know, the balance sheets are smaller. I think in totality, if you look at all the investment banks, they're halved. But the capital is much stronger. So that's a result of that. And it's changed how those banks go about making their money and how all the banks go about making their money.
And so in your view, it's healthier now?
It's healthier now, and now I think there's going to be a tipping point, you know, that the banks that got ahead of that and really took care of their compliance, their regulations, spent a lot of money for that, or maybe going to be able to pull back. And the next change that's going to happen kind of as a result of that recession is what we just talked about. They're going to start pouring that money into the technology side of things. So those banks that got ahead of the curve on the regulation side are going to be ahead when they're pouring money into the technology spend.
It makes you wonder where we're going to be in 10 years from now.
Absolutely. You know, and where there's going to be in 10 years and how is the U.S. banks going to be versus the European banks. There seems to be more of a gap widening there, and who knows what it will look like in 10 years.
We're doing so much on our smartphones now, it makes you wonder if that's going to be the only place to do banking.
Well, I think that most people born, you know, in the last, you know, you pick a number, 10, 15 years, probably will never set foot into a banking institution, and certainly the next generation will never do it. It will all be app-driven or online-driven.
They don't know what they're missing, the pneumatic tubes and the lollipops. It was good times.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's nothing like it comes back to what we said before. Customer service still will be there. I think we still will always have physical banks, at least in my lifetime here, because people still want to be able to touch somebody once in a while. You can't completely abandon it for the traditional banking. There are going to be consumers that abandon it from the consumer side, but I don't think that the concept disappears 100%.
Rod, always good conversation. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
Thought leader Rod Murray from Associated Bank this morning, where he is the SVP for Commercial Banking, head of Leverage Finance Group there at Associated Bank. And you can also head to associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership to listen to other thought leader conversations and meet all of our thought leaders. Past conversations also at WGNradio.com. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. There's more trouble at Chicago's top startup. Alcom Health, which raised $500 million this year, is being sued by its investors. The investors, which include Goldman Sachs and Alphabet, say Alcom knowingly provided false data and financial reports. Alcom came under scrutiny last month after a Wall Street Journal investigation found the company was misrepresenting the effectiveness of its ads. Glassdoor officially opened its new Chicago office in the Fulton Market. The 52,000-square-foot space currently holds 200 Glassdoor employees employees, and the job review site said it plans to have 400 Chicago workers in the next 5 years. And Amazon's new service that lets delivery drivers open your door and leave packages inside your house is now live in Chicago. Amazon Key allows Prime members to get in-home deliveries through a smart door lock and camera system. Whether people will be comfortable letting Amazon drivers into their homes is a different story. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. GenPop, which is powered by Ipsos, has launched a new research piece, a quarterly research piece for consumers, WTF. In this case, it means What the Future. We're happy to have with us Matt Carmichael this morning. He's an editor, senior editor at GenPop, also the director of editorial strategy for Ipsos North America. Matt, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the this new research piece, What the Future?
Yeah, we gathered together a great panel about experts on the future, because we know future or housing is it's a category that really touches all of our lives, and it touches all of the different things we do and we buy. You know, it touches the kind of packaged goods we can own, or the cars we drive, and the energy, and the furniture, and the financial services. So because it's an industry that's so important to every under industry, we wanted to be able to understand the big questions that are going on that are driving the changes that will impact the future of housing. These are big questions that our clients are asking, and we like to be able to ask them with them.
And it's a short of getting a crystal ball, you've lined up some pretty good folks here to talk about this. We're all familiar here in the Chicago area with Lawrence Yoon, who's the chief economist over at the National Association of Realtors. But you have people from IKEA, others. Talk about the panel, and why are they looking ahead 5 or 10 years? Is that the time frame?
Yeah, we kind of wanted to look at the immediate future, you know, not necessarily into the 100 years or 150, but things that are actionable now for business and the trends that are impacting not necessarily next quarter, but the next year, the next 5 years, the next 10 years. So we put together a group of people with very different perspectives on housing. You know, we have a mayor, we have an economist, we have an urban theorist, and as you mentioned, IKEA and AARP. They all have a different idea about the future of housing. They're all asking a different big question. But these are the kind of questions, again, our clients are asking, and we need to be asking to be able to plan for how it's going to affect each of the industries that we all work in.
I don't want to steal the thunder because I want people to go and read this and get it for themselves. But, you know, one of the big questions in terms of housing has always been, is it owning a home a part of the American dream still? I think a lot of people are debating that. How do you answer that question?
Well, we asked especially the older millennials, the 25 to 34-year-olds who should be entering the home buying phases of their lives. And we know they're, you know, from empirical data, they're having a difficult time doing that. But our data shows that 82% still aspire to own a home. So that part of the American dream is still very much baked into it. But with financial difficulties, with changes in the market, with student loan debt, they're having a hard time achieving that goal.
The other part of this, too, that I think is jumping off the page is as the baby boomers age and start to retire, 83% of older Americans want to age in place. That is, they don't want to leave their homes as they get older. That's going to be a big driving force in our future, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things our data shows is that they probably overestimate how capable their actual home is of allowing them to do that. As we get older, we have mobility challenges. A lot of our needs in our homes change, and we overestimate how well our homes can accommodate that. So that's a big sort of area where public policy can come in, where construction come in, where remodeling can come in, and we can be designing homes for those needs, but also we need to retrofit a lot of our existing homes to be able to allow this freedom to age in place.
One of the other topics you address here is mobility and migration. We're seeing some trends now where you mentioned millennials earlier. They may be thinking about moving back to the suburbs from the cities. What trends are you seeing here, and why will this be important in the future?
Yeah, well, I think one of the big things is that affordability is a huge issue. And it's an issue for owners. It's an issue for renters. It's an issue for younger millennials. It's an issue for baby boomers, too. And so there are a couple different ideas within this report, some kind of big questions about incentives. And are there ways to incentivize existing residents to move them out of their kind of not in my backyard mentality that might allow for more development and more density and a little more affordability, both in cities and suburbs? And there's also some ideas about incentives to get people to move from one place to another. You know, very few people move each year. 60% of people in America live in the state in which they were born. But as the economy changes and as new job types open up, those tend to be geographically consolidated. And so are there ways that we can get people to kind of overcome their barriers toward moving to other locations? And so a lot of that is discussed in here. There's a lot of great data about which strategies might work and might not work. And I think these are some big questions that our cities need to be asking, and also our businesses as we're looking to attract talent and find workforces.
Again, the quarterly series is called What the Future. It's hooked me, Matt, so I'm sure this is going to be great going forward. What other topics are you going to address going forward, can you say?
Yeah, so this is a quarterly series. We're looking at the big four consumer spending categories. So the first up was housing. Next, we'll be doing transportation, and then food, and then healthcare. And you can go to gen-pop.com and sign up for our newsletter, and we'll make sure we keep you updated and get you the new reports as they come out.
Well, Matt, it's very good talking with you, and we look forward to following this in the future, and please come back.
I will absolutely do so. Thanks for having me.
All right, Matt Carmichael this morning from GenPop. He's an editor there, also director of editorial strategy for Ipsos North America. And I'll give you that website again so you can go find this. It's gen-pop.com, and you can catch up with all of the latest. Again, the first What the Future about housing.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, Dow futures falling further this morning off 68 points now. And NASDAQ futures off 24, and S&P futures are off about 8. Gold and silver are mixed this morning. Oil at $56.95 a barrel. We have a couple stories that we're watching for you this morning. U.S. antitrust regulators and AT&T are sparring over whether the wireless carrier would be required to sell Time Warner's CNN cable network as a condition of approval for its deal to buy the media company. The U.S. Department of Justice has demanded significant asset sales in order to approve the $85 billion deal. AT&T this morning is telling CNBC it has no intention of selling CNN and plans to fight the Justice Department. Of course, the initial thought is here there's something political going on. President Trump has been a harsh critic of CNN, regularly calling it fake news. There are concerns that perhaps this might be politically motivated. A couple of other instances in news bits this morning. Las Vegas police have cited the driver of a semi-truck that crashed with a self-operating shuttle bus on the day the driverless vehicle debuted. The police say the citation was for illegal backing. No injuries were reported. And again, it's important to point out it was the truck driver that crashed into the self-operating shuttle bus. The vehicle is powered by the French company Navya, collided with the semi-truck less than 2 hours after people began taking rides on it. China's largest online retailers agreed to buy $200 million worth of Montana beef over the next 3 years, representing as many as 90,000 head of cattle and potentially investment of more than $100 million. More coming, apparently. New investment in a slaughterhouse in the state also under the terms of that trade deal, which were released yesterday. Panera Bread CEO Ron Shaich is stepping down as CEO. Also, the company is buying Aubon Payne, bringing together two chains the executive helped build. Companies have not disclosed how much Panera is paying for the competitor. An acquisition says it'll boost its presence at airports, hospitals, and colleges. Also, the U.S. regulators at the FDA have approved the first drug to prevent life-threatening infections in adults after a bone marrow transplant. The Food and Drug Administration approved sales of Merck and Company's Prevymix. Prevents infections, a common virus, too, that's associated with that. It doesn't sicken most people, but strikes at least half of transplant patients who are particularly vulnerable to infections. And Walmart hopes to temper shoppers with online deals before Black Friday. It's beginning some online deals Thursday and plans to offer most of its Black Friday deals online starting at 12:01 a.m. on Thanksgiving. Stores will be open all day Thanksgiving with deals available there at 6 p.m. Walmart is adding a color-coded map of store departments on its circulars that it hopes will make it easier for customers to find items. Now, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, November 9th, the Labor Department releases weekly jobless claims. Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, releases mortgage rates. The Commerce Department releases wholesale trade inventories for September. Macy's reports quarterly financial results. The Walt Disney Company also reporting quarterly financial results. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, November 9th.